Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined by the early worm, Jeff Rimebo. Jeff, what time is it in your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm an early bird, not an early worm, man.
Oh, yeah, that's
early
right.
An early worm is the one that gets pecked right on the top of his head.
That's true.
Snatched off to be food for some baby bird somewhere.
You don't want to be that, right?
No. Hey, I tell you, are we not the luckiest cats in the whole world? I mean, we are talking ball at 6 o'clock in the morning here, and I don't know what it is back there, but... And then we get to coach ball today, so it is not much better than that.
Now, you've got your first day of mini camps. This is the first podcast actually being recorded in the new NFL UK offices. So, Jeff, they've moved into Leicester Square, and I'm looking out the window. I can see the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral. I can see the city off in the distance. I can see the Shard. It's fantastic. It's a nice setting to be recording and chatting football with you.
The palatial offices of the National Football League in London. And I tell you what, Neil Reynolds in the corner office, leather couch, you know, fine furniture. It's amazing. They don't get bigger than you, buddy.
There is no office in this building at all. It's all open plan. But I'll tell you what you would like, Jeff, and you'll love this when you get over here. So they have, like, this amazing coffee on tap. So there's an iPad attached to this desk. And on the iPad, you can basically, you can just hit a button. You can get a flat white, espresso, whatever it is. You can change the strengths of it, and it saves it. No, so it saves it. So you can have this app. You can have an app, and basically it pre-orders your coffee, and it knows exactly how you like it. You just press a button, and off it goes. I'm drinking too much of it. That's why I'm excited, and that's why I'm talking about worms instead of birds. It's got me buzzing too much. But also buzzing for the NFL draft coming up this week. So all three rounds will be on Sky Sports. All 3 days, of course, all the rounds will be on Sky Sports. The first 2 days are going to be on TV, and the third day will be on skysports.com. Jeff, we'll get into the defensive prospects coming up soon, but this is always a great week for fans of all the teams, because this is when you have that hope.
Yeah, no question, and this is when, I don't want to overload it and say this is when you can improve your team the most, but, you know, this is when you have 7 opportunities. If you have all your picks, and some teams have more, some have a few left, but you have 7 opportunities to make your football team better. And, you know, I think that is really an amazing thing. You know, that you have the way the league structures it, and I think this is we do it so much better than other leagues do. If you are a bad team, you have a better chance at a better player because you're going to draft ahead of the successful teams. Now, that doesn't guarantee you anything except the fact that you get to, you know, draft before somebody else, but it should translate into a better football team.
Mm. No, you're right about those picks. You talk about the Cleveland Browns have 11, so you can accumulate picks. And, Jeff, this is an interesting time as well because this, buried among all of the draft picks that are made, we might see some veteran trades. Now, we'll certainly see teams moving about the boards to grab the rookies that they're interested in, but we could still see, I don't know, Jimmy Garoppolo, AJ McCarron. The Bengals are saying they're still potentially open to shopping him. I think the Kirk Cousins thing has kind of settled down. I think he's willing to play under that franchise tag. He told me he did approach the ownership and they kind of said they're all in with him. But Richard Sherman is out there. Malcolm Butler as a potential. I mean, there could be some big veteran news coming up in the coming days.
Yeah, and I tell you what, don't think that there isn't a lot of conversations, a lot of phone calls, a lot of discussion around every possible scenario where a team can upgrade its roster. And, you know, you look at team needs, for example. We talk about, you know, the team needs a running back, team needs this, team needs that. Well, that's all well and good, but when you start talking about veteran free agents, like signing Adrian Peterson, those guys are going to cost you more money than a rookie will. Mm. He's younger. He's not hit. There's so many factors in this whole deal. And then, like you say, the trade thing, you know, that'll go right up through the draft. I mean, I'm talking about through all seven rounds of the draft. People will be on the phone, general manager to general manager, coach to coach, you know, a personnel guy to personnel guy, trying to see what they can get. Because, again, it's all about asset management, right? Mm. Your assets are your current players. Your draft picks are assets. So it's a lot of stuff that goes on. That's why I think it's such a phenomenal, phenomenal time of the year, and the draft is great, not only great television, but it's great drama.
Yeah, Seattle have that openness to trade Richard Sherman, and they talked about it. John Schneider said that they have a certain price. They haven't really shied away from the talk, and they have a certain price, and if it doesn't get met, then they will carry on with Sherman, and it was just in a bid to get younger and cheaper. They also still hold the rights to Marshawn Lynch. We thought that was a done deal with him going to the Raiders. Jeff, as we approach the draft, the Raiders would like to know if Marshawn's coming to town or not, wouldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely, because, again, if he's not, then you've got to exercise your plan B, whatever that plan B is. And, again, I think it's real important that the fans understand that there are so many scenarios playing out right now. One of the things that's this week in particular, because we get into draft week now, this is when the staffs and the will sit down and they will actually conduct their own mock drafts. I think that's phenomenal and really an interesting kind of look behind the curtain, because let's say that we were working for the Dolphins and you were a personnel guy, I'm a personnel guy, you know, in Nick Pike's personnel guy, you know, Jamie King's a personnel guy. We would sit down in the draft room with our, you know, with our, and let's say I would make you the Patriots, Jamie's the Bills, Nick's the Eagles or whomever, and then you would pick in their spot in the draft so that you try and play through all the possible scenarios that could unfold. Because there's no question that part of the draft process, Neil, is to project what other people will do at that pick.
And then you've got to react quickly, Jeff, because this is the thing. You can't not have that plan B ready to go, because you only have 10 minutes to, you know, and you know, if you're going back and forth and saying, "Oh crikey, we haven't even got a plan B, now what do we do?" You're gonna get behind, aren't you? And we just know that's not the way these pro teams are gonna operate. They're gonna turn over every stone and they're gonna be ready.
Absolutely proactive, and you know, they coined the term or the phrase the war room, because that's really what it's like. It's like being in the bunker and you got a bank of phones around you and all your maps and charts and you know where everybody's tanks and guns are, and you know, you're playing through the scenarios. And you know, again, so this is a very, very, very high pressure time for not only owners but general managers, personnel guys, all the way down to the area scouts, because their entire year's worth of work, in some cases on the higher, like on a Myles Garrett, they've had Myles Garrett on their radar for a long time. So there's a lot of work that has been done on these players, and a lot of people have spent an awful lot of time and put their reputations in some cases on the line for these guys. And this is make or break time.
All right, well, let's make or break, Jeff. So we'll leave you in the war room because you've been there before, but I'm not going to be up to the task, and our producers, Jamie and Nick, they're definitely not going to be up to it. So we'll move on and chat about a couple of other bits of news. I've got three other things I want to talk about, and then we'll get into the defensive players. I know you want to talk defense, Jeff, and we'll get to them in just a second. But DeShone Kizer, the quarterback from Notre Dame, and he's one of those that was in that first-round discussion. And it felt like, Jeff, and again, it's only a perception thing, it felt like in recent weeks that his star has been fading and that he's been sliding down some draft boards. I don't know if that prompted the quotes that he gave to USA Today last week, but they have made some headlines. He said, "No one else can do what I can do." And then he said, "This is bold, but I do have the ability to be the greatest quarterback to ever play. Imagine taking Tom Brady's intellect and Brady's preparation and putting it on a guy with Cam Newton's body. why can't I be the greatest? Jeff, I just wanted him to stop talking after the first sentence, and then he went on and on. I mean, you as a coach might say, well, I love the confidence, but I just think, what are you doing? There's players like this that kind of get my back up. And I've said it before with Johnny Manziel came into the NFL like he was already a superstar. Throw a pass in the NFL before you decide you're going to be the greatest. And I don't know, I think this is ill advised from Kaiser. What do you think?
I'm going to just tell you what. I agree with you. And I'm going to tell you, it reminds me of being at a Christmas party. It's like going to your office Christmas party, and somebody starts having too much to drink, and then all of a sudden they start talking, and the next thing you know, they're wearing a lampshade on their head. So this is, oh boy, I tell you, young kid, this game will humble your young ass. I'm not telling you anything different. And, you know, I heard the comments, and my immediate reaction, so what are you saying? Tom Brady has no athletic ability, and Cam Newton's dumb? It doesn't prepare? Why? And again, this just points to the things that were thinly veiled in Brian Kelly, his college coach's comments about him not being ready.
Mm.
There's a lot of ways to not be ready for the enormity of being a quarterback in the National Football League. And one of those ways is to not have the maturity or the, I don't know, awareness, I guess, to make statements. Yeah, to make statements like this, because now you got to understand, there's a lot of guys that have been feeding their families and done some awful, tremendous things and some awesome stuff that now you're saying, what? You how many games you win in Notre Dame?
Right.
What? I watched TV. I saw you play.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
And
you're right, Jeff. It humbles them quickly, doesn't it? Because we've talked about that transition from college to the pros. It's a big jump anyway. And you just think, don't come in. Because I think back to Manziel as an example, Jeff, because he came in making the money sign and he was very brash. And there were players in the NFL who wanted to stick it to Johnny Manziel the moment he got onto the field. This might be the same way with Kaiser.
Yeah, I just really think that when you look at a kid that says something like this, you know, I mean, it's almost like he's desperate trying to get, you know, to get people to pay attention or think he's better than he is or whatever. But obviously, there are a host of ways that you can get a red flag. Mm. When we talk about a red flag, as we look at that, you know, you and I are talking about a player. Well, you know, you got to red flag that kid because he's had an off-field issue. He's had, you know, whatever. There's any number of ways. And here's one of the ways, particularly when you're at that position, where you're at that leadership position.
Mm. Jeff, the quotes were surprising and they made you sit up and take notice. What was not surprising, and this was, the least surprising aspect of all of it, and I was half expecting it, and it came just a few hours afterwards, was Deshaun Kaiser's protest that his statement was taken out of context. I mean, they always do that at the end. I mean, I knew it was coming. I just knew it was coming. Oh, I was misquoted. It was taken out of context. I think this was the USA Today. It wasn't like this wasn't some local newspaper that I started out on in Kent, with all due respect to the Kent Messenger. But this is like the USA Today, Jeff. I think they would have got their quotes right.
Yeah, and you know what? It's again, here's a kid who played at Notre Dame. And, you know, it's not like he played at Northwest Louisiana. This kid played at Notre Dame. And playing quarterback at Notre Dame is a huge position. And you would have thought that he would have a better sense of how to handle the media than making that statement and then having to come out and, you know, what to me is even worse, now say, well, I was misquoted, right? So, again, it's a huge black eye on the kid. And I think, you know, frankly, to me, it's a red flag. I would question now maturity. I would question leadership. I would question all of those things. And again, as you get down to these last days, again, you do not want anything to, you know, give a team an opportunity to say, well, we maybe ought to reconsider that one.
Mm. The NFL schedule was released last week, Jeff. One thing I want to talk about there with relates to the UK. So we have three of the four games being played in London are going to be lunchtime kickoffs. So the games are Jacksonville and Baltimore, September the 24th. That's a 2:30 kickoff. October the 1st, Miami and New Orleans, 2:30. October the 22nd, this game is at Twickenham, the Rams and the Cardinals. That is a 6 p.m. game, but that's also half-term week, so people should be able to get their families to that one. And October the 29th, Cleveland against Minnesota, that's a 1:30 kickoff. The Twickenham tickets go on sale April 27th, the day of the NFL draft first round. Jeff, earlier in the off-season, there was talk that the NFL in the United States was going to push back and that all four London games could go back to being evening kickoffs. I think this is quite a win for NFL UK to have three of the four games being played at lunchtimes, because I've seen the stadiums packed with young fans. Families can get to the games and get home at a better time in the evening, and more fans can come from across the UK. I mean, what are your thoughts on those three games that we're going to have, particularly at those lunchtime kickoffs?
When I saw that, Neil, I was really ecstatic, because I agree with you. And then additionally, that's NFL football, right? You know, Sunday night football, Thursday night football, Monday night football, all of that is really a television event.
Mm-hmm.
But the game has always been and was meant to be played Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And so our fans in the UK get a true feel of what an NFL game day is like. And I think it's fantastic because, as you said, the future of the game is in the young fans. And so a young fan now can come be a part of, even if they don't get in the game, they can come be a part of the whole experience. All of that is phenomenal. There just aren't many things in sport where game day is such a big deal, where, you know, with the tailgating and the, you know, all of the stuff that goes around the game. And then additionally, families have the opportunity now, if you're from the north of England or wherever, you can come down, see the game, and get back home that same night, which is, again, cost effective because you're not spending, you know, nights in London hotel rooms.
Yeah, absolutely. One last piece of news, Jeff. It looks like Adrian Peterson is closing in on a $3.25 million deal with the New Orleans Saints, so that will see him head to London to take on the Miami Dolphins. Peterson was outstanding when the Vikings played against Pittsburgh in 2013. He's obviously been through on and off the field issues since then. This is a far cry from the $18 million he would have made with the Minnesota Vikings had they not opted out of his contract there. Jeff, Mark Ingram's coming off his best year with the New Orleans Saints. So does this deal make sense to you? Or what do you think of Peterson if he does end up with the Saints?
Ian, I think if he's going to have an impact, it's going to be as a situational back. He's not going to get the every down carries. $3.2 million for a guy that may touch the ball 7 to 9 times a game, it sounds a little stiff to me, particularly when you have as much of a glaring need as the Saints have on defense.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm sure that when Sean Payton and that crew looked at it, they said, well, we got a chance to have a guy that can come in here and, you know, if he has anything left in his tank, and I'm sure they've worked him out and done an awful lot of research on his knee and all the other things that have, you know, plagued him the last couple of years, then, you know, maybe we can catch lightning in a bottle and get one great season out of him. But again, the football guy inside of me says, based upon what I saw, Neil, I don't see the guy that once was.
No.
You got to really be careful with veterans, particularly at the running back position, that you recognize that you're paying $3.2 million for what you have today, not the guy that led the NFL in rushing and was such a dynamic player.
Right, yeah, you can't live on history. And Jeff, I get what you're saying. You know, if he is a role player, because Mark Ingram has become a player who can make plays in the passing game as well. So it's not like we're not going to see Mark Ingram on the field. So if Peterson is purely a role player, then you might say, well, that 3.25 is pretty expensive. But I think this is an indication of what has been a humbling time for Adrian Peterson. Well, I think this time last year, Jeff, take someone like Matt Forte, who was heading off from the Bears to the New York Jets. He still managed to get $7 or $8 million per year out of the Jets. So, I mean, we always felt this was going to happen. The longer it went on, the price was going to drop for Adrian Peterson. And I don't know, this, the one thing I would say then to this is, if the price has dropped to this point, Peterson said all along, it's not about the money, it's about being in the right situation and competing for a championship. I don't think the New Orleans Saints were a running back away from competing for the Super Bowl this year.
No, and to me, the thing that's, the other thing that's interesting about it, Neil, is the timing of it. Because if his price has continued to drop, I think it would continue to drop after the draft, because, you know, the Saints are basically saying that we're now not going to go running back in the draft. And who's the, this? There's a bunch of good running backs. If you feel like you have a running back need, there's a bunch of good running backs in this draft that are certainly going to be less expensive, less age, less hits, less injuries, you know. So it was a little bit curious to me, because unless they felt like there was somebody else out there that was ready to pull the trigger,
right.
And, you know, those are the things we just don't know. But I kind of scratched my head when I saw it.
Saints play the Minnesota Vikings in week one, Jeff.
Yeah, there we go. Let's go. More drama, more intrigue, more rivalry.
There's always plenty of that in the NFL. Let's have a look at the defensive players in the NFL draft. Then we did offense last week. Jeff, we'll get into the position groups and some of the big names to look out for, particularly in the early rounds on Thursday and Friday. But first of all, set the scene for us. This is a decent group of defensive players coming out, isn't it?
I think it's an outstanding group of defensive players, Neil. I think that you look at every position, particularly the positions that, quote, matter the most now in the National Football League. You're talking about edge rushers. You're talking about corners. You look at those positions, and there's depth, and there's talent, and, you know, I just really feel like in the last, you know, few years, this may be the best overall group of defensive backs that I've seen. And, you know, again, you're talking about, and we're going to get to Myles Garrett, but, you know, he's been referred to, now I'm not sure I'm ready to go this place with him, but he's been referred to as a generational player at his position. So, again, that's pretty tall words.
All right, let's start with Myles Garrett then, Jeff, out of Texas A&M, defensive end. He had 32 and a half sacks in 3 years in college. A lot of experts have been saying, if you look at the number two player in this draft, it's hard to say who's the second best player in this draft, but the clear number one across the board, from start to the almost the finish, where we're in draft week now, has been Myles Garrett. But interesting quotes from Hall of Fame defensive lineman Warren Sapp this week, who labelled Garrett as lazy. He doesn't take over games, and that you're only going to get four plays per game out of Myles Garrett. What do you think of Myles Garrett?
Well, again, here's the problem when you have a guy like this. He's dominated the level that he's played at. Now, the challenge is, how hot does his motor run all the time? And again, I understand the comments, because when you do watch the tape, there are times when you wish that he would pick it up, that he would step it up, that he would just go dominate the game. And then there are other times where he will, for stretches of a game. But one of the challenges that you have in pro football is trying to get players, young players, to understand the absolute need to play at a high level all the time. Now,
right.
I will tell you, when you compare him to, let's say, a Jadeveon Clowney on tape, he's much more instinctive. He looks like he enjoys the game more. There's more energy in his game than Jadeveon Clowney's senior film. But again, you say, you know, with all that ability, you should really, really be a guy. Now, again, do I think he's a generational player? I think that's too strong a word, but I do think he's the best player in this draft. And there will be people that will take shots at him, you know, because that's just the nature of the business. But right now, if you're the Browns and you got a chance to get a guy who can rush like he can rush and as devoid of pass rush as they are, it only makes sense.
Jeff, I wonder in future years, we'll get into some of the other players in a second, but I wonder in future years if it was so obvious from early in his college career that Myles Garrett was going to dominate everyone while he was at Texas A&M, almost you'd be better off getting out of college and getting into the NFL as quickly as you can, because you know, we saw, I think the accusation leveled at Clowney was that he kind of took plays off because he knew he was going to the NFL and he didn't want to get injured. Now we've had the other guys that have not played in the bowl game. We talked about them last week when we discussed the offensive players that are in this draft. I mean, you can understand if a player suddenly is about to, you know, try and protect himself because he's about to go and earn millions of dollars, but then maybe you're better off not being in college and putting yourself in that situation.
Yeah, it's a difficult deal because, again, these guys are making business decisions. And, you know, they get criticized. And I think that, you know, whether it's Christian McCaffrey or whomever that didn't play in their bowl game, I think that's kind of you're being unfair to the kid.
Right.
You know, because you look at Jake Button, that's a perfect example of what we're talking about.
Jalen Smith last year, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly. They come in and as guys that may not, you know, whether you like Howard or whether you like Jake Butt, he's going to be a high pick at the position, and he gets hurt in a bowl game, and now there's question about his knee. Jalen Smith still is just now getting strength back in his leg. I mean, he hasn't played a down and probably won't play a down for another year, and that was a guy that was projected as a first-rounder.
Are they insured, Jeff, when they do that? I mean, it's a question that I get asked a lot by fans, because take Jalen Smith. He was going to be a first-round draft pick last year, and he blows his knee out. And you're right, he's only now just starting to get feeling back in his toes. So there's still potential that he never plays a down in the NFL. Do they take out insurance in college to once they know they're a certain level of player?
Well, I think that if they're well-advised, they do. Mm-hmm. And I think it was actually Lloyd's of London who started that, kind of not trend, because it's not that strong. It's not that many guys do it. But certainly if you're one of these guys that we're talking about today,
yep,
and you know where you're at on people's boards, you have a sense of, you know, where you're going to go. If you're smart, you're going to do that. And because you know, it's what insurance is for. It's risk management.
Let's take a look at some of the other edge rushers, Jeff, when we look at the defensive linemen, because we've got interior guys like Jonathan Allen from Alabama, but you talked about edge rushing and getting after the quarterback effect in the past. We've got Solomon Thomas from Stanford, Derek Barnett from Tennessee, Tack McKinley from UCLA. Who are the guys you like here? I've seen Thomas go on many mock drafts as high as number 2 overall to the 49ers.
Yeah, I like him a great deal. You like his length. You like his ability to bend. He's a Stanford kid, so he's obviously going to be intelligent. I think there are a tremendous amount of things to like about that guy. Mm. When you look at these edge guys, Neil, to me there's really two categories, because you think about a 3-4 team, what that edge guy needs to be able to do, and
right,
then you think about a 4-3 hand on the ground end and what that guy needs to do. I like, obviously, Solomon Thomas a bunch. You know, you watch his tape and you see all the things that you want to see. He's big enough to slide inside. It's going to be interesting to see where he will end up in a system, because you know, he's 275 pounds. He's kind of like that tweener kind of guy, if you will. And it's hard to believe a guy 273 is a tweener guy, but it's tough to play inside at 273 unless it's in a sub package and some sort of, you know, second down and long, third down and long defense. So I think that you look at him and again, you always talk about comparisons. You know, who does he compare to? Physically, he reminds me of DeMarcus Ware, that kind of guy.
Mm.
I like him. I like him a lot. Barnett's good. The kid that blew it up or has blown it up since he finished his college season is that Hassan Reddick kid out of Temple. I mean, he had a phenomenal Senior Bowl. He had a great combine.
Will he move inside, Jeff, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if you're going to be, if you may take him as an edge guy in the 3-4, he's going to probably have to be a linebacker if you're talking about 4-3 kind of guy, and then a situational pass rush guy come down to the edge in those situations. So there's a lot of flexibility in this group, but you go through the group, Neil, and you know, whether it's Taco Charlton out of Michigan, who, again, has been able to get to the quarterback, T.J. Watt, J.J.'s brother, yep, at Wisconsin. I've seen him play live. I think he's a tailor-made guy for, you know, when I project a guy and I say, oh, man, wouldn't it be cool to see that guy play at that place, whether it's because of the scheme or whatever, because I just think the Packers, man, with their needs, you know, if they could get him, he would be a phenomenal fit in that 3-4 there. He's a Wisconsin kid. There's a lot to like about it. You know, and one of our fans said something about the projected guy that you think will go a little bit later that might be a guy. And I gotta reach down a little bit, and I'm gonna give you a name, and I'm gonna tell you a little story. Dietrich Wise Jr. Mm-hmm. from Arkansas. All right, I coached his father, so I'm gonna say there's your guy. There's your guy again. That may be a guy who later in the draft can do that, because he has some of the traits. You know, he has some of the stuff you look for, and you know, again, it's such an inexact science. So you're trying to always find that guy that maybe doesn't have the, you know, the hype coming out of the draft, but when you get him, you say, man, I love this kid. You know, he's had production. He's gets after the quarterback. He's strong. You know, you wish he was a little bit quicker, you know, out of his stance. But again, he's strong, physical, and you played at a really high level. You play in the SEC as a D lineman, you know you can play.
Yeah, and let's stick in the SEC then, Jeff, and talk about Jonathan Allen, because you mentioned a lot of those edge rushers, and some of them will end up just being sort of explosive outside linebackers, someone like Tack McKinley, who's a little bit undersized. But is Jonathan Allen that kind of... Everyone's looking for a Michael Bennett, right? Somebody who can play at defensive end, but somebody who can move inside as well.
Right.
Allen, is Jonathan Allen that? Can he be that?
Yeah, and you know, I think, can he be Michael Bennett?
Well,
that's a big shoot. Yeah, exactly, because I think Michael Bennett right now, and it was interesting, I saw this said the other day by McCoy from Tampa Bay. He was watching tape, and he said Michael Bennett's the best defensive lineman in the National Football League right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the best in the league saying it about him. So that might be a little bit strong, but I tell you what, the thing that this kid can do, which is it's so hard to find, is he can rush from inside.
Mm.
And those are the guys that really are difference makers. You can find some edge guys that have that great ability to bend and turn the corner and all that stuff. But here's a guy that, you know, playing a lot of stuff that makes it tough for you to rush at Alabama, really, really, really showed that he could rush from inside. I think this kid is the best inside guy in this draft.
And Jeff, that inside pass rush is so, so important. I sat down last week when we were on the road, and I did an interview with Kurt Warner, and Kurt said, you know, we all pay attention to the left tackle against the defensive end because he's protecting the quarterback's blind side. But he said, you know, I can step up from that pressure. And he said, I would rather have that all day long than inside pressure straight up the middle. He said, it's an absolute killer for a quarterback. And Kurt said, toughest player he ever played against was Warren Sapp, because he would just dominate from the inside. So, you know, that's why somebody like Michael Bennett, who can move inside and still collapse the pocket, is so valuable, and probably among his peers is considered the best in the game. Whereas us from the outside, we might say, well, he doesn't have as many sacks as Von Miller, or he doesn't have this, or he doesn't have that. But you know, I think once you create havoc in the middle, it's a whole different game, right?
Well, yeah, and again, when you're talking about an inside guy, and that's good you brought that up, Neil, so that the listeners kind of get a feel. The edge guy is the guy that sets what we call sets the edge of the defense. Mm. The pressure comes from outside. And you can nullify edge, really good edge rushers by, you know, by climbing the pocket as a quarterback. What's really, really difficult is when you're getting compressed or you're getting, you know, pushed back, right? And that's what the great inside pass rushers do. If you are a dominant inside guy, that is really, really difficult for an offense because now it changes your protections. You're going to need to get help on that guy. You don't always, it's like Warren Sapp. He played the what we call the over tackle or the three technique in Tampa Bay. Well, very rarely did you see the center slide away from him because that poor guard would have no chance. And you know, again, that's what these guys can do. They can dictate protection. And those inside guys that can push and compress the pocket are worth their weight in gold.
Jeff, let's move on to linebackers. And we talked a little bit about Hassan Reddick, who could end up, you know, like you say, playing multiple positions at linebacker in the NFL. Another who's been highly rated is Reuben Foster from Alabama. And there we go with Alabama again. I mean, the amount of prospects they churn out every year. But Reuben Foster, Jeff, he's failed a drugs test at the combine that's been reported. In fact, there's a couple of first-round talents, Jabril Peppers as well, the safety out of Michigan, failed a test as well. And both provided what's known as diluted samples. So this is where you basically, well, the accusation that would be leveled against them is that you drunk so much water to dilute whatever was in your system. These guys were saying we're just trying to hydrate and we drunk too much and we made a mistake. But let's start with Reuben Foster. I mean, is there a red flag there? Because he got sent home for sort of acting up at the hospital as well, didn't he?
Yeah, you know what, there's a call. You look at that and you say, all right, he had the incident in the hospital where they're going through their medicals. And, you know, I saw where Coach Saban came out and really tried to protect him on that deal. And then now this diluted sample issue. And, you know, I think each team will make its own decisions about that. They'll look at the facts in the case and they'll say, okay, is the talent. And I think this is important. I think that you got to understand that as you evaluate a player, there's certain amounts of risk involved in every guy. And that may be injury, that may be height, that may be speed, it may be character, it may be anything. So it's a risk to reward ratio that you have to work with. And then you have to make a decision based upon your individual conversations with the kid, bringing them in, talking to them, having your player development guys spend time with him, really detailing into his history to find out, you know, what is the risk factor involved in taking this player. But Reuben Foster is a phenomenal linebacker.
Well, yeah, let's talk about him as a football player, Jeff, because I've seen stuff where he's been compared to Bobby Wagner, and he's one of these linebackers who can play all three downs. If he's another Wagner, Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, I mean, those linebackers that don't have to come off the field are what everyone's looking for, but you don't find them very often.
Yeah, and you know, and he has that rare ability to, you know, to the thing that a linebacker's got to do if he's going to stay on the field all three downs today is you got to be able to play pass defense. And as the game has changed, the ability to move laterally, the ability to flip your hips and drive on the ball and locate receivers in coverage. Here's a kid in 2015, he led the nation in pass breakups at linebacker. So he has proven that he can do that. He's also big and stout enough and enjoys contact enough to be a guy that can come in and, you know, be downhill on the lead back and all of the things that you traditionally look for in a linebacker. He can beat you strength-wise, and he can beat you with his quickness in his hands. I just see so much good about the kid as a player that, you know, you got to say, man, oh man, this guy is a very, very good linebacker. He could be a every down player for us, and we got to consider that.
All right. Any other linebackers, Jeff, before I move on to corners?
Well, you know what? You look at that linebacker list. The kid that I like is a kid out of Vanderbilt. Now, you don't think about Vanderbilt. That's not a place where you're, you know.
Zach Cunningham, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that kid has got some ability now. You know, and what you look for is production, number one, to me. All right? he has been a tremendously productive player without great players around him. You know, when you took it, when you look at a guy like Foster, you know, you got to remember now he's got Jonathan Allen playing in front of him. He's got great players all around him, great players in the back end. This kid has been playing at a school where he doesn't have those kind of players around him. And, you know, you look at him, he really, really is productive at the point of attack. He has the instincts, the first step. He's big enough. He's long enough. So I like that kid. I think that kid will be a – I don't know if he's a first rounder, but I think that's a guy that if you got a linebacker need and your team's all of a sudden we're sitting there at draft day – and you hear Zach Cunningham called, you got to feel pretty good about him coming to your football team.
Yeah, consistent production, Jeff. 3 years at Vanderbilt, close to 300 tackles. So like you said, if you're doing it there when people going in to play Vanderbilt probably know he's the guy that you've got to stop defensively, and he's still making 100 tackles a year.
Yeah, I agree. I just really think that when you look at his production on tape and you consider all the factors, and again, a kid at Vanderbilt's like a kid at Stanford. Those are going to be highly intelligent kids. That's the nature of what they have to recruit there. And you watch him too. And I think this is another thing that people don't realize, right? And here's a little, again, peek behind the curtain in the process. When you take a kid from Vandy who's not had a tremendous amount of success as a college player, and you put on the tape against Alabama where Alabama's up by 20 or whatever and the game's over with, and you really look close at how he plays. And this is a kid that regardless of – there are a lot of guys who play hard and play fast and play tough when the game's on the line or they're ahead. This kid has played from behind an awful lot in his career at Vanderbilt, and it doesn't matter whether they're up by 3 or down by 30 – he is motor runs, and that's what you look for.
All right, let's move into the secondary. Do you want to go safety first, Jeff, or corners? Because it is a really good safety group, isn't it? Jamal Adams from LSU has been on a lot of lists is number 2 in terms of the prospects. Do you want to go safeties or corners?
I think we ought to look at that safety group because, man, is it intriguing. When you see it, and I think Jamal Adams, to me, is the guy in the group. And you talk to coaches, and the one thing you hear about Jamal Adams is how he left a legacy at LSU. Now, there have been some pretty good defensive backs come out of LSU. Now, I'm talking about Tyrann Mathieu and Patrick Peterson and a whole bunch of them for a long list of years. But this kid is the one they talk about his not only what he did on the field and his impact in the games and, what a dynamic player he is at the safety position, but just his leadership, his toughness, his great team, all of the stuff. So he's a total package kind of guy.
Jeff, with Adams, let's just stick with Adams for a second there. I read an article where he was compared, and these pro comparisons are so interesting to the fans, but they're so dangerous for the player because he was compared to Troy Polamalu, and you think, oh boy, what shoes he's going to have to fill if that's what he's already being compared to. But where it was interesting, because what it was basically saying is that with Troy Polamalu, you never knew where he was going to line up. I mean, he was a physical tone setter, but one minute he could be 3 yards from the line of scrimmage, the next he'll be 20 yards downfield. And I think that's what they're getting at with Adams, is that you can line him up in a multitude of places, and that's going to just play with quarterbacks' heads.
Yeah, and the ability to play coverage is really unique. When you look at safeties, right, it's that guy that can do more things. And like you say, the more you can do, the more places you can line him up. This kid, when you watch him play off coverage, he looks like he played corner. I mean, he looks comfortable doing it. I think the thing as you evaluate him and you project him and all those things, what's Polamalu-esque to me is the way his recklessness, the way he gets after people. I mean, Troy, you'd see Troy jump over the center to make a play. Well, you see the same things. Go watch LSU on the goal line. This kid's flying over the line of scrimmage trying to get to the back. So I like all of that about him. To me, what a fit would he be at Tennessee in Dick LeBeau's scheme?
Oh my goodness, yeah. They need some. They're looking for secondary players. That would be a big one. Who else are we looking at in safety wise?
Let's talk about our adopted. Not adopted because he's an English kid.
We're gonna take him.
You know,
we're having him. We'll take him.
Melifonwu, yeah, from Connecticut.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Now, in addition to having maybe the greatest name in the draft that will cause all kinds of guys problems, this guy's gonna, Chris Spielman will be up for hours trying to pronounce his name.
Is this gonna be known as Obi?
That's right. Well, Obi-Wan Kenobi from Connecticut is pretty freaking special when you look at his numbers. Oh man, I mean, you look at him and you just go, size, speed, all of the, you know, we always talk about the size, speed, size, strength, speed ratios. Mm. This kid has it all. He just, you look at him in the ball drills at the combine, and he took off and he went. You're talking about a guy that now you stick him in the middle of the field and let him run sideline to sideline. Now that really changes the dimension for your corners, because he now will have an opportunity to, those corners now have an opportunity to really lean on outside routes, because you've got a guy inside that can, you know, that can just cover so much, can really, really, he has great range, and that's one of the things you look at as a safety. To me, the knocks on the kid, or as I look at the kid, where I'm a little bit concerned, he's not as physical and aggressive as you would like to see a guy play at that position. For me, I mean, I'm just talking about for me. Now, again, that's me. Because, again, in this day and age in the NFL,
they don't all wear those neck rolls anymore, Jeff.
Whoa. I'm not going that far back there, brother. I'm just.
But they don't have to be Ronnie Lott, do they, nowadays?
Because of the fact that they won't let them do those things anymore. I mean, if you took Jack Tatum, Ronnie Lott, and.
You'd never play a game. You know, it'd be suspended every week.
It'd be unbelievable. So, you know, again, that's just the difference in the game. So you can get away with this kind of guy a little bit more. Mm. But he does have just freakish athletic ability. And you know, even at the, when you saw him at the Senior Bowl meal, I looked at the Senior Bowl practices on tape, and they threw him out there at cornerback a little bit just to see if he could cover. And, you know, he held his own. He didn't look natural at it, but he certainly didn't look like he couldn't do it. And you're talking about a guy at 6'4", 223 pounds.
Wow.
You know, so that's a big man up to the corner.
Obi might go into the second round. What about Malik Hooker and from Ohio State and Jabril Peppers, who I mentioned earlier from Michigan? Are they first rounders? We could see four safeties going first.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's interesting, isn't it, Neil, that the safety position to be so strong. I mean, normally all we talk about is corners, right? The safety is kind of the running back of defense. It's that undervalued position. But it's making a comeback because the guys that can do multiple things, that can go down and cover in the slot, you know, the guys like those are the guys you're looking for, and each of these guys has an ability. Malik Hooker is, again, I think, a shade under Jamal Adams, but still – you look at his body work as a college player. He's got great range. He's got ball skills. He's all of those things that you look for in a guy playing in the middle of your defense. Mm-hmm. Now, Peppers is the one that's really intriguing to me, because you really don't know what to do with him, because he can do so many things.
Right.
I mean, he played linebacker at Michigan. He played corner at Michigan. He played slot corner at Michigan. He returned kicks at Michigan. He is a phenomenal athlete, a great competitor. What scares people a little bit about Peppers is he doesn't give you the great numbers, you know, when you look at him. He's not huge. I mean, it's all that thing about, you know, the size, the speed, all those things. Can he get in down in there against the NFL tight ends? Can he, you know, hold up? Again, he doesn't. Although he played corner, I don't know if he has really true corner skills. Mm. But he can change it. He can change his direction. He can flip his hips. He's aggressive. He's smooth. He got a lot of really nice things about him The biggest issue is going to be where do you put him and how do you use him? Mm. But he'll give you some flexibility now.
It feels like this is right, Jeff, that this is a good draft for safeties and this is a good draft for tight ends, because the NFL is increasingly becoming about those matchups. Can you find a tight end who can line up on the end of the line and then you spread him out like a wide receiver? Can you find a safety who can play deep but then can also line up in the slot and cover? And this year, it's a good class for both sides of that ball. Those have become increasingly important positions, as you said, but the draft stock hasn't necessarily been matching what the teams have been looking for. This year it is.
I agree, and again, it's such an intriguing group of players because there's everything that you want there. Mm. Again, you want physical guys, there's physical guys there. You want cover guys, there's some cover guys there. You want guys like Peppers that can do a lot of things. You got, so if you have a need in the back end, this is a good year for you.
All right, let's move on and finish up with cornerbacks. Marshawn Lattimore from Ohio State is listed as the top corner. Jeff, we've got to factor in Sidney Jones from Washington, who got injured, and again it goes back to that getting injured in college scenario for a prospect. Who do you like at corner this year?
Well, to me, this is an incredibly deep group, right? Because if you start at the top and you say Marshawn Lattimore, and I agree with you, Neil, I think he is the best one in the pick, in the deal, you can go all the way down to, you look at the names, and Adoree Jackson at USC, I mean, great return ability, great ball skills. Gary and Conley got overshadowed by Marshawn Lattimore at Ohio State, but certainly is, in my mind, a first-day talent. Marlon Humphrey out of Alabama, you love his length. You love all the things that he did. And again, Tre'Davious White at LSU. I mean, there's so many in this group that I think, you mentioned the kid from Washington. There's a kid right now nobody's talking about per se at Colorado, Chidobe Awuzie. And again, he's a guy that can play now. I'm telling you, he can play. So this is a very, very deep group and a very good group, maybe one of the better corner groups that there's been in a few years.
All right, let's wrap up this week's podcast, taking a couple of questions. I'm trying to scroll through Twitter to find some of the questions, Jeff. Let's take this one from Lee V, who says, should the Bears draft a quarterback in round one? What do we think on the Bears? They've got Mike Glennon, but what do you think on the Bears? Jeff, just actually on the quarterbacks generally, this could be really fascinating because, like we said, there's not a huge amount between the quarterbacks that are coming out in terms of, there's a clear number one and a clear number two. But when you look around, flip it the other way and look around the teams and what they need. Obviously, the Bears, Mike Glennon might not be their long-term answer. You've got Cleveland, the Jets, the 49ers, all looking for a starting quarterback. But then you've got teams that are going to be starting to think about a succession plan. The New York Giants, the Arizona Cardinals, the Pittsburgh Steelers. We might see teams take a quarterback in the first round who won't play that quarterback in 2017.
That's the perfect scenario for these quarterbacks because I don't see a one of them, Neil, that I would want starting for my football team his first year.
Right.
I see some ones that you may want to, you look at them all and you go through the list of them and you say, Deshaun Watson, give him a chance to, adjust to the nuances of the pro game. He didn't play in a pro offense at Clemson, got ability. You look at Patrick Mahomes, same thing. He played in the run, the air raid offense at Texas Tech, but he's, golly, you fall in love with his body and his arm. And then even Trubisky, who maybe, if you look at the tape and you say, well, that he's maybe the most pro, right? He reminds me of Blake Bortles in college. But even at him, he's got 13 starts under his belt. I don't want a guy with 13 starts lining up against the New England Patriots. That's not good odds. So if you can get one of these guys and you don't have to play him, I think that's the perfect scenario. However, let's talk about the Bears. That's really a fascinating thing. What are they paying Glennon?
right now? $15 million a year.
Okay, that's a bargain. Because on the average, NFL teams, they have over 20, I think it's 24, 25 million in the quarterback position. So if you get Glennon and you feel like you can, he can get you through a year or 2 years, and now you can get one of these young kids, you're not strapped cap-wise, you know. So here's what I think may become the trend a little bit in the league. When you look at what Philadelphia did last year, they went out and got Bradford, right? But that didn't take them off of a quarterback. It just gave them another asset. So if in the draft they didn't get Wentz, they would feel, okay, we got a guy,
right?
I'm sure the Bears feel the same way. So now they don't have a gun to their head in the draft that we got to go get a quarterback in the draft. And frankly, there's not one in the draft that I would take that way.
Right. I think there's a bunch of teams that will be, you know, San Francisco will ride Brian Hoyer if they have to, if they don't find their answer at quarterback. The Browns will cope for a year with Cody Kessler if, you know, and I think it's going to be that way, Jeff. I think I've just had Mitch Trubisky's agent on the phone. He wants to know why players today in this podcast have been compared to Troy Polamalu and Bobby Wagner, but his guy's getting compared to Blake Bortles. He's not happy.
Well, you know what? I know this is a big year for Bortles in Jacksonville, but, you know, again, look at some of the kid's showing flashes.
Yes,
right?
He has. I like Blake.
You got to understand what he's been dealing with.
No offensive line.
No offensive line. Changes in coordinator every year. Yada 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 yada. And that's hard now. That is hard. But you look at the physical things about him. You look at his intelligence. You look at his arm strength. You look at all those things. You say this kid's got a chance. Now, again, same deal. I don't know if I'm ready to bet the ranch on Mitch Trubisky if he has to start 18 games or 16 games in the National Football League.
Bortles is going to be an interesting one to watch this week, Jeff, because Deshaun Watson has gone to the Jags in a few mock drafts, and so we'll see how that pans out. Last question here comes from Stephen Beach, who says, the general managers have pre-agreed deals with each other to trade up if a certain player is still on the board, or does it happen all on the night? Well, we know for a fact last year, Jeff, that the Rams and Titans, they sealed that deal for the, you know, changing positions 2 weeks before the draft. So conversations take place ahead of the draft and on draft night, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And the toughest thing, when the further out from the draft that you make a deal, the toughest thing about it is to keep it quiet. Because
right.
That was what was so amazing last year about the Rams and the deal that they pulled off was that, you know, they were able to keep that thing quiet on both sides. Because, you know, you're talking about multiple amounts of people who know about it. And, you know, that's everybody, you know, everybody in the media is looking to say for that off-the-record comment so they can break a story. So I thought that was amazing. Now, again, to go to the listener's question, yes, there is. And there's, as we talked about, scenarios. You're always playing out scenarios, right? So if you're a general manager, I'm a general manager, and I know you've got the sixth pick and, you know, there's something that I want, and, you know, we can say if this player B is available at that point, then we will trade you this for him, right? And again, so there's all of these things, all this intrigue, all of that going on all the way up till the commissioner goes to the podium and says with the, you know, whatever pick the Miami Dolphins choose, and then we know.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be following all of the picks on Sky Sports. The first pick will be made 1 a.m. The early hours of Thursday night, early hours of Friday morning. It'll be on Sky Sports. So we hope you all enjoy the NFL draft all 3 days on Sky Sports. Days 1 and 2 on the regular channels, and day 3 will be on skysports.com. I'm off to make up a mock draft, Jeff, which always makes me incredibly nervous for SkySports.com.
I cannot wait to see that. I hope that
I'm not showing you. You'll laugh at
me. Put that on the internet, will you?
No.
Put that on the internet, because I want to make sure that way you can't run and say I didn't say that.
Yeah. Yeah. My mock,
hey, but you know what, man?
My mock draft was taken out of context.
You and me, we ought to tweet through the draft. You know what?
No. See, now you're saying that because it'll be 8 o'clock in the evening for you. You'll notice that I went silent because it'll be 1 o'clock in the morning.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, you take the early rounds, and then I'll just carry it through.
Right, I'll hand it over to you. We'll let you get out onto the practice field, Jeff. Thanks for your time, and say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.